When did your light bulb go off? We're talking about that idea you have for a new product or app. Listen, if you want to make your idea a priority, but you don't know how to get it off the ground, you call Davison, the one company with over 25 years experience and exclusive process that turns ideas into products and apps that are found in retail stores and online. Our team has helped tens of thousands of people, just like you. Call now and ask for our free idea starter guide. We'll show you how to securely get started and protect your idea. Whether you have a patent or not, our process will get your idea ready to get in front of a corporation. Don't let your light bulb of an idea go out. Call Davison now for your free idea starter guide. Davison charges fees for services. 800-213-9256. 800-213-9256. 800-213-9256. Again, that's 800-213-9256.
This is Killer Innovations, a show about ideas, creativity, and how you can innovate. Welcome to the Innovator's Garage, where you learn to create your next game-changing killer innovation.
Welcome to Killer Innovations. I'm your host, Phil McKinney. We are back here in the studio this week. We are still on the road traveling, so if you see us out and about or you want to track what we're doing, you can hop on over onto the Facebook page for the Killer Innovation Show. And I'll be posting updates from the road. We are out in the road over the holiday season this year, actually interviewing entrepreneurs and innovators in what I would call the more rural areas. First up will be Paducah, Kentucky, the hot spot of the U.S. We found some really interesting entrepreneurs there and some really interesting local activities around economic development. So that's what we're up to during our holiday season this year. But here in the studio today, we actually have a guest, Sharon Weinberger. Sharon has just recently written a book about DARPA. Sharon has a journalism background, but it's an interesting perspective. If you're a regular follower of the show, you'd know I've written some blog posts on DARPA and have been a big fan, but have also pointed out some of the where I think not just DARPA, but the government has pulled back from its investment in support of innovation. We've brought Sharon on to talk about her book, but also to get her perspective because she's been covering DARPA for quite some time. So, Sharon, thanks for joining us today on Killer Innovations.
Hey, Bill. Thanks for having me.
So give us a little bit of background. You've got a journalism background and have actually covered the government, DARPA, and other activities in D.C. So give us a little bit of context of your background.
Sure. I fall into this little bit of a weird niche between national security journalism and science journalism. I have been writing about the science and technology of national security since about 2000. And when I first went into journalism writing about these issues, one of the things that I noticed was that national security journalists tend to focus on military operations. They want to write about wars. And science journalists have tended to stay away from military topics for a couple reasons. One, the focus of science journalism, certainly within the United States, is often on fundamental breakthroughs. Academic science tends to look down at times on military-funded science, particularly if it's science funded within the government laboratory system. And also, I think it's very frustrating for science journalists to deal with the Department of Defense, where you call 10 times and you can't get an interview. They're used to picking up the phone and calling journalists. But I became fascinated by this area. The Pentagon is historically one of the largest funders of science and technology in the country. It's changed the direction of science and technology. And so I was just always fascinated by this area and the people I interviewed, and more importantly, how science in the national security state functions. How does it function differently than in industry or academia? And that's the perspective I come from.
So do you have a technology background, or is it just a natural curiosity thing for you?
No, I'm more of a natural curiosity. My background, like a lot of journalists, isn't even in journalism. It's in international relations and political science. I was part of the old Russian East European studies contingent that, you know, went away and is now coming back in style. But I first got very interested in this issue after graduate school when I went to work as a researcher and writer for, of all things, a defense company. And they were doing studies for the Department of Defense. And one of the studies I was assigned as a lead to was to look at the Department of Defense laboratory infrastructure. And so they sent me around the country interviewing directors and scientists at these military labs, essentially to say, what are you doing and why are you doing it? And the answers just baffled me.
Yeah, it was interesting. I have a little bit of a background. You and I were talking before the start of the show today, you know, that I used to live in D.C., lived there for 13 years. But way back in my early in my career, I got involved with certain three-letter agencies. My background is high-speed pattern recognition. So I was part of a startup company out of Chicago called Thumbscan Biometrics. This is back in 1985, 1986. So certain three-letter agencies were very interested in it. And then that was my first introduction to these national labs. And back then, you go around and you're looking at what's some of the work that's going on in these labs, and you're like, oh, my gosh, some of this stuff is, like, mind-blowing. And many of it, in the national labs, struggle with how to get it out of the lab and get people to actually do anything with it.
Yes. I mean, the national labs, but, you know, the Department of Energy sponsored labs, the nuclear labs, and then, of course, on the other side, the DoD labs, they struggle with many things. They struggle with many great innovations and how to get them out. They struggle that sometimes the basic science they do isn't as good as what's done in academia. And they struggle with the very closed nature of the system and how classification affects science and technology innovation. So they have these sort of multi-layered struggles that are fascinating. But it's a lot of money, and it's very important.
It is very important. In fact, I testified in front of the Senate late 80s, I guess it was, on a article that I wrote with regards to government-funded research at universities and the lack of transfer out of that research. You know, what was the ultimate impact? And I was affiliated with the University of Illinois. I'd done a couple of spin-off companies of taking technologies out of U of I and launching those. But University of Illinois ranked in the top 10 of government dollars received, yet ranked like 197 in licensing and commercialization of that research. And it's hard. It's like incredibly hard. I mean, I spent a lot of time at Oak Ridge. For some reason, fingerprint biometric and supercomputer research is big at Oak Ridge National Labs. And so I spent a lot of time at Oak Ridge, you know, and you see these phenomenally brilliant, smart people, and they can't commercialize it. But what I found also, tell me, you know, because I come, you know, having been CTO at Hewlett Packard, in HP Labs, 300 PhD researchers, incredibly smart. We were lucky if we got 1% of any of the projects at HP Labs commercialized. And that's in business. It's not any different.
Yeah. I mean, I remember visiting Oak Ridge Lab probably about 10 years ago, and they had this little sort of museum of things that they were able to commercialize. And it was almost quite sad and funny. It was like the smallest, weirdest, most modern. And again, they do great science there and great technology. But the things they commercialized were just bizarrely small and almost irrelevant.
Yeah, well, it is really interesting. You know, back in the 80s when we were doing work with the agencies and with Oak Ridge and whatever, you know, we were one of the early companies to do the first of the CRADAs, the Cooperative R&D, right? Under you know, with, you know, and then also in support of what the work at the university with the Dole Act to try to encourage universities to commercialize government-funded research, et cetera. And I, you know, and actually, it's you coming on the show. I kind of sat back because I haven't really been involved in the government work for so long. I'm like, has it gotten any better?
I think it's gotten different. I would not say better. I think what government struggles with is, you know, every few years they relook at this problem, you know, the small business innovative research contracts, the CRADAs, how do we commercialize what the government does? And the irony is, I think the best things that have been done have almost been by accident rather than by design. When government starts to think about trying to how transition technologies, they sort of layer program upon program and come up with metrics that often don't mean anything.
Yeah, it's actually interesting because it's one of the big topics we've had on the show here over the last 14 years, right, is what's the right metric, right? Be careful what you measure because you will lead people to do bad things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in a way, I think metrics are the worst part of how to measure innovation because then it becomes a scoring game rather than really about what you're trying to achieve. One of the things I struggled with the DARPA book is, you know, thinking about the agency's legacy, how do you measure whether the agency is successful? And every few years, you know, DARPA itself has commissioned a report, you know, how many of our projects have transitioned? What impact have they had? And again, the scores are meaningless. You know, we don't think of DARPA as successful because 85 or 90% of its projects or 5% or 10% failed or didn't fail. We think DARPA is successful because there are things we use in our everyday lives, like the internet that came out of DARPA. I don't know how you score that.
Well, that's it. You clear the gate or is it really by impact? And then how do you measure impact? Right. Yeah. This is a little bit of my frustration having been leading, R&D and innovation at a very large organization, and Wall Street measures it by R&D spend as a percentage of revenue. And it's absolutely non-predictive of innovation success. It's an absolutely bogus metric. And it's one, though, that Wall Street imposes on publicly traded companies. You have to use this metric when you do your 10-Q reports. And it's stupid. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to pick up our conversation with Sharon Weinberger talking about her work and her look at DARPA and government research. But we're going to dig also into her new book. So don't go anywhere. This is great stuff. Give you some great insight, some great ideas. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break. You're listening to Killer Innovations on the BizTalk Radio Network. Carpenters have their hammers and saws. Chefs have their outfitted kitchens. And musicians have their instruments. A craftsman's ability to do their job is dependent on having the right tools. So where does an innovator, someone who takes an idea and makes it real, find the right tools to do their job? Outfit your innovator's garage by visiting innovation.tools. Innovation.tools is an online store created by innovators for innovators. It's where you will find tested and proven tools to help you create that next great product or service. These tools include books, audio training, video training, brainstorming how-tos, and much, much more. And for a limited time, listeners of Killer Innovations will get 25% off on your first order by using the discount code RADIO at checkout. And 100% of our profits from your purchases will be donated to charity. So go to innovation.tools and create that next great innovation.
Rwanda is a shining example of how the global community can come together and rebuild a country after a devastating genocide. But there is still more that needs to be done. In the rural villages, students are crowded into schools with no electricity, no running water, no internet access, and limited sanitation. Will these kids be ready to continue the rebuilding of Rwanda, or will they be dependent upon others? Through education and employment, boys and girls have an equally promising future that can transform their struggling communities. For $20 a month, a child can be educated and a community strengthened. By supporting Pioneer Education Africa, a 501c3 charity, you partner with others to provide education that will prepare a generation to take on the task of self-reliance. 100% of the proceeds received go directly to the education of the children. Visit pioneereducationafrica.com to find out more.
Do you owe $10,000 or more on at least two federal student loans? then you may qualify for new programs offered by the Department of Education. These programs can reduce your interest, lower your payments, and possibly qualify you for loan forgiveness. If you have $10,000 or more and at least two federal student loans and currently not in school, you may qualify for one of these programs. Call now to check your eligibility. Student loan advisors are standing by to help you determine if you qualify for these new programs. They can help you reduce your interest, lower your payment, and even forgive a portion of your student loan debt. Take control of your financial future. Make this free 5-minute free call now to Nationwide Student Loans and learn how you can reduce your student loan debt.
800-439-1588. 800-439-1588. 800-439-1588. 800-439-1588.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370. 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
Biz Talk Radio.
This is Killer Innovations, a show about ideas, creativity, and how you can innovate. Welcome to the Innovator's Garage, where you learn to create your next game-changing killer innovation.
Welcome back to Killer Innovations. Before we hop into this segment, need to do a quick shout-out to one of our sponsors. Today's sponsor for the show is Zoom. Zoom has actually been a longtime sponsor for Killer Innovations. It's a tool technology that we use every day. Bringing our guests in for the show, using it in my day job as a CEO, staying connected with my team, scattered literally all over the world. It's a tool that I could not be successful without. Now, lots of us have tried video collaboration technologies and communications tools or whatever, but I'll tell you, the one metric that I use is Zoom is the first video collaboration technology that doesn't suck. So try it out. You can get your free account. Hop on over to killerinnovations.com/Zoom. That account will allow you to collaborate with up to 50. That's right, 50 people. So you can try it out with your team, see how it works. And believe me, once you try it, you will not go back. You will be hooked all over Zoom. So check it out and hop on over to Zoom. Also, let them know that you heard about it here on Killer Innovations. That helps us out. And again, try it out, killerinnovations.com/Zoom. So, Sharon, let's pick up the conversation here. Your book has just recently come out, The Imagineers of War, which I thought was a kind of a very interesting title, The Untold Story of DARPA, the Pentagon Agency that Changes the World. Now, some of our listeners, you know, about half of our listeners are based here in the U.S., half of them are outside the U.S. I'm sure many people know DARPA, but some may not. Give us a little background context for DARPA.
Sure. So DARPA is an agency that was formed in 1958, authorized by President Eisenhower, as a direct response to the Soviet Union's launch of Sputnik, the world's first artificial satellite. There's a lot of mythology that has sort of developed around Sputnik over the years, and it sparked this immediate panic, a little more political than that. But it is safe to say that within a few weeks, there was this incredible political controversy that the United States was falling behind in the space race, behind in education, behind in military technology. And some of that, there were elements of truth in it. A lot of it was overblown, but it was a political crisis in Washington. So Eisenhower decided to consolidate all of the space programs, the Army, Navy, and Air Force, to include Wernher von Braun and the German rocket scientists who've been taken from Germany and installed in Huntsville, Alabama. And it was all put under this new agency in February 1958, called at the time the Advanced Research Projects Agency, ARPA. So even before NASA, the first space agency, actually DARPA, or ARPA at the time, was the first space agency with the goal of getting the United States into space. And that is the origin of where it came from.
And so, you know, DARPA has been around for quite some time. It's had, you know, kind of its ups and downs. You know, we know of it from the standpoint of some of the big projects that have had big impact, like, you know, the internet, which started off as ARPANET, really is a way to drive collaboration amongst institutes doing research. What are some of the other things that maybe people aren't as aware of as projects that have kind of gotten birthed out of DARPA?
Sure. I think one of the most significant ones that's forgotten, because it doesn't seem as sexy these days as ARPANET and the internet, DARPA in its very first years pioneered a nuclear test detection system. Basically, they modernized the field of seismology by building these seismograph stations around the world, enabling nuclear test detection, which gave birth to the modern era of arms control, like the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. And as part of that, because they were modernizing and pouring money into the field of seismology, they actually changed that entire academic field. And the data from those seismograph stations helped prove plate tectonic theory and the publications that came out of it. Not necessarily as sexy these days as the internet, but this was a tremendous impact that DARPA had in its early days.
Well, I think you bring up a good point, right? It's also, in many cases, it's a second order effect, right? They were trying to solve the problem of nuclear detection, but it has this huge long tail of impact, and, you know, just changing the whole face of science in certain areas.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, let's take the case of ARPANET, the predecessor to the internet. The assignment was given to DARPA to do something with command and control. Harold Brown, who went on to become the Secretary of Defense, but was then a senior technology official in the Pentagon, said he gave this assignment to DARPA because he was thinking about command and control of nuclear weapons. He wasn't thinking about institutes collaborating with each other. But the person that they hired to run this new office at DARPA, J.C.R. Licklider, a psychologist with an interest in computers, had a much broader vision. He saw the way that computers and people's interaction with computer was going to revolutionize the world, and he started putting in place a program for computer networking. So, as you said, second order effects.
Yeah, and Licklider, I've read a number of books on him and read his papers. The guy, you know, given that he doesn't have a technology background, but he had that ability to kind of see beyond and create the right structure to a challenge that just ignited passion from his teams. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, he had this very messianic vision, and he was a proselytizer. I mean, so many people that I interviewed from the early days of DARPA said they hadn't really thought about computers the way he did, but he would give these lectures. He would bring in DARPA scientists. And, you know, there was this one demonstration done in the early 1960s at a hotel by the Pentagon where he tried to show people this is what personal computing will look like in the future, and you might be downloading recipes, you know, in your kitchen. And people, they couldn't even conceive of it before he talked about it.
Yeah, totally discounted from the standpoint of you get a little bit too far out and you get discounted. But I think in hindsight, you know, he's a name that most people don't know, but
exactly.
His vision has impacted majority of the world's population every day.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting that he is certainly well known, I think, among people, sort of historians of computer scientists and people who have an interest in the history of science and technology. But, you know, he's an unknown beyond that world, which is really one of the great misfortunes of history.
Well, it's not, you know, I think it's also, we'll talk more about this in the next segment of the show, but, you know, there's probably a lot of these hidden, you know, big successes that people just don't know about, where DARPA's had such huge impact on business, science, medicine, policy that people just don't know about.
Oh, yeah. another area that DARPA really isn't given a lot of credit for is the emerging field of brain-computer interface, basically devices controlled directly by neural signals, came directly out of DARPA research starting in the 1970s.
Yeah, and that's actually another good example of being so far out there, because no business could be out as far ahead as DARPA is, and then it just kind of creates this vacuum that brings investment capital, business support, research support, students, et cetera. So stay right there. We're going to be right back after this quick commercial break, continuing our conversation with Sharon Weinberger on her book, The Imagineers of War, The Untold Story of DARPA, the Pentagon agency that changed the world. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break. You're listening to Killer Innovations on the BizTalk Radio Network.
Do you want to take the great shows of BizTalk Radio wherever you go? Well, now you can with the new BizTalk Radio app for iPhone and Android devices. Now all the great shows of BizTalk Radio are with you wherever you go, just an arm's reach away on your smartphone. Download today at the App Store or the Google Play Store and get the brand new BizTalk Radio app. It's biz for you wherever you go with the new BizTalk Radio app.
Are you ready to leave your corporate job behind and be your own boss? Have you ever dreamed of owning a business? Do you have $50,000 or more sitting around in a 401k? If you answered yes, it's time to invest in yourself by buying or starting a business or franchise. IRS code allows you to use money in a 401k to invest in a business with absolutely no penalties or taxes. At Guidant Financial, we've helped more than 11,000 entrepreneurs invest $3 billion in retirement assets into the small businesses and franchises of their dreams. So if you've got $50,000 or more in a 401k and you're looking for a way to start a business, call Guidant Financial now for free information and to learn more. Operators are standing by for your call. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. That's 800-570-6630.
A message from DAV to returning veterans. Thank you for doing your duty and doing our bidding. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way and putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for defending our freedom and displaying your honor. DAV thanks all veterans by fighting to get them the benefits and support they were promised. Visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
How old are you? 25, 35, 50, or older? If you have pain, we can help. Do your knees hurt?
Ow!
Let me ask you again. Are your knees killing you?
Oh, yeah. Are they ever?
What about your back? When you bend over, does it feel like this? How about when you get out of bed in the morning? If you're like me, your knees and back feel like this.
Oh, that hurts.
I found a company called the Pain Relief Hotline. They specialize in ways to treat your knee, back, and neck pain without surgery or taking medications. The good news is if you have insurance, you may have little or no cost or out-of-pocket expense. I've used them. It works. Call the Pain Relief Hotline now for free information. 800-303-4607. 800-303-4607. Call now. 800-303-4607. That's 800-303-4607. 303-4607.
Investing is a long-term process. How many times can you think of in the last decade that the stock market has destroyed retirement funds for people just like you and me? For your existing IRA, you need the security that gold has provided for centuries. Remember, gold has never been worth zero. Capital Gold would like to introduce you to the Home Storage Gold IRA. It's a self-directed IRA set up with all the protection and tax benefits of an LLC. But the big difference in this IRA is you invest in gold and you hold it in your possession. You can't do that with stocks. That's security. You can transfer any type of IRA hassle-free in days. Please call right now and learn more, and we'll waive the $500 setup fee and give you a free safe to store your gold. Call 800-223-0092. 800-223-0092. 800-223-0092. That's 800-223-0092.
Are you struggling with addiction or alcohol problems? If you're depressed, drinking, and using drugs, you may need help. And the Affordable Care Act guarantees coverage of substance abuse.
I knew I could get myself out of this. I just needed some hope and some help.
I took the first step to recovery when I made the call.
Call the Addiction Hope and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
I feel like I'm losing control. I'm afraid I'll lose my job or even my family.
Call now for hope and help with proven, gentle recovery programs.
I never thought that I could be somebody who didn't drink and use drugs.
I'm in recovery, getting the help I need.
Call the Addiction Hope and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
Biz Talk Radio. This is Killer Innovations, a show about ideas, creativity, and how you can innovate. Welcome to the Innovator's Garage, where you learn to create your next game-changing killer innovation.
Welcome back to Killer Innovations. Before we hop back into the show, I want you to do a quick shout-out to one of our sponsors, HP. Now, you've been a regular listener to the show. You're probably rolling your eyes going, hold on, Phil, you used to work for HP, and that is the case. HP's been a sponsor for the show now coming up almost on a year. They've been providing all the technologies in the studio for us, which has allowed us to produce the show that we make available to you free of charge. But HP also, through their support, is also supporting some of the nonprofits that we're involved in, and particularly Hacking Autism, which actually started at HP. Hacking Autism focuses on helping people on the autism spectrum both find work, find better access to therapies and technologies to help people on that on the spectrum. If you're interested in looking up more about Hacking Autism, you can hop on over to hackingautism.org. If you want to see what we're doing with the HP gear here in the studio, hop on over to killerinnovations.com/HP, and you'll see all the gear and technologies that we're using here in the studio. And stay tuned. We actually have a new studio that's being built. And we'll be doing a full video tour of that studio. For some reason, you guys all like to really see behind the scenes what we're, how we make this all work. So we'll be doing that here relatively soon. So again, hop on over, killerinnovations.com/HP. Sharon, let's talk a little bit about you. Your subtitle of your book is pretty interesting, The Untold Stories of DARPA, the Pentagon Agency That Changed the World. There's been a lot of articles and stories. There's even been videos, and you know, there's been a lot of talk about DARPA. Are there really untold stories about DARPA?
Yes, and many more than I thought, even when I started the book. You know, my hesitation when I first went into this is exactly like you said. I thought, well, I kind of know the history of DARPA. You know, it was born in 1958. It did this and this, and it created that. And I was a little hesitant until I started doing the research when I discovered a few things. One, there were about 100 boxes of recently declassified materials at the National Archives and Records Administration, materials that had never been touched before. You know, actual memos that Licklider was writing back in 1962, actual memos of DARPA program managers in the field in Vietnam, classified programs no one had ever even heard of. And so there were literally untold stories. And then I also tracked down people going back to people who were employed deployed at DARPA when the agency opened its doors in the Pentagon in 1958, and they had stories to tell. And then there was this entire hidden history of this seminal figure at DARPA, an intelligence operative who ended up going to prison, who was so important to the foundations of the agency. And as often happens when someone goes to prison, it kind of been written out of history. So yeah, there were a lot of untold stories.
Okay, so now you've got me intrigued. So 100 boxes. Did you go through all 100 boxes?
I went through the vast majority of them, and there are still many more boxes that are not yet declassified. I don't know if those are whole news stories or what's in them. Some of them I requested through the Freedom of Information Act to have reviewed and declassified. So let me give you one small example of a small but important story that came out of these boxes, something called Project Star. It was an emergency top secret project assigned to DARPA just a couple days after President John F. Kennedy was assassinated in Texas, where they suddenly realized we didn't have technology to protect the president. That was part of the problem. He was just driving along in an open car. And so DARPA, as this military science and technology agency, was assigned this project to come up with technologies to protect the president, and they went to work coming up with ideas. Unfortunately, many ideas of DARPA are very good. This project did not produce a lot of great ideas. My favorite was the non-lethal squirt gun.
The non-lethal squirt gun. Okay. In the fact of the untold stories, what did you have as your kind of mission of telling the DARPA story? Is it to kind of poke the government to kind of reinvest, or is it just to make tell a good story, or to inspire? What was the real premise behind the book?
Here's my theory of the world. We as people make sense of ourselves through narrative, through story. We tell a story about our lives. Well, so do agencies. And DARPA's story is it was born as a space agency, had this incredible story of innovation, and it's wonderful. And there are elements of truth in that. What I wanted to ask is, what is DARPA's legacy? Like, what has made it so successful? I do think it's incredibly successful. But is it as successful as it claims to be? And if so, why? And I think that answer best comes through a narrative. And most importantly, through the parts of the narrative that have been left out. I think the biggest gap in that narrative is the role of William Godell, this intelligence operative who went to prison, who really set DARPA on its course, ironically, for innovation in ways that nobody ever thought really happened.
Okay, so what's his story, and why is he not a name I've ever heard, and I've read a lot about DARPA, and he went to prison, and he was an intelligence operative? So what's his story?
He was one of the first employees of DARPA back when it was founded in 1958, and he was basically put there by the intelligence community because part of DARPA's creation was sweeping up all of the space programs to include a classified program called Corona, which became the first Earth imaging satellite. And so Godell was sort of put there because there was a lot of spy money involved. And when the space mission was taken away from DARPA, the first director quit in disgust because he really saw DARPA as a space agency. And that basically left this intelligence operative, William Godell, as sort of the man in de facto control. And he looked around at the world and he said, I see a new mission for this agency. We have problems with the Soviet Union, but I don't see a nuclear exchange in the next few years. I see the rise of insurgencies in places like Southeast Asia, and that's where we should bring our technology to bear, is in proxy wars and in Vietnam.
Interesting. So in effect, because of the formation of NASA, he pops up as having been defining the charter, in effect, for DARPA in the early days.
He defined the charter and in ways that even the current DARPA doesn't quite understand his impact. So he created this very ambitious program in Vietnam, which in the 1960s was the third largest program in DARPA. You basically had missile defense, nuclear test detection, and then Vietnam. And he started a jungle combat center, developing everything like silent aircraft to the first drones that were being sent to Vietnam. And after the Vietnam War ended, and that office needed to be closed down. Goodell had been sent to jail for fraud, I think unfairly, but that's an entire another story. And the director of DARPA said, we need to find a way to hide this office from Congress, to save the technologies. And so this director renamed it the Tactical Technology Office. That office today, which is a direct legacy of Vietnam, is the largest, most successful office in DARPA. It is what produced things like stealth aircraft and drones that we so closely associate with DARPA today.
Amazing. I mean, like you said, that is the untold story. Because, like I said, I've read lots of books about DARPA, but you know, there are these characters that are hidden, and I think this actually plays into a little bit about just DARPA in general. We talked about this earlier in the show about lots of things that impact our day-to-day lives that we just don't even know originated from within DARPA.
Yeah, and this goes also to a bigger lesson that I draw out of the book, which is I think there's the impression of DARPA today as this sort of nifty science fiction agency. But in reality, the legacy of DARPA is as a science and technology agency that thinks about warfare. The fact that the most successful technologies out of DARPA derived from basically the Vietnam War tells us something, you know, for better or for worse, about what drives innovation, which is problem solving. Vietnam was a big problem.
Well, and I think also what DARPA did quite successfully was, though, is define the problem and then partner to find the solution, right? If you think about, you know, stealth aircraft work with the Skunk Works guys at Lockheed, or you think about, you know, the ARPA network and the work at universities like UCLA or University of Utah, you know, those things, you know, where DARPA, you know, has great scientists, but they also recognize that there's this great capability of bringing industry to partner. And I think that becomes a little bit of the challenge going forward with some of these activities, because there's this barrier of collaboration becomes a real problem. When we come back from this commercial break, Sharon, I'm going to ask you just to kind of give two or three key insights that you uncovered in your research on the book that the listeners can kind of maybe apply to their own thinking around innovation. And don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this quick break. If you've got a topic that you would like to have covered on an upcoming show, drop me a note at phil@killerinnovations.com. And we'll be back right after this break. Carpenters have their hammers and saws, chefs have their outfitted kitchens, and musicians have their instruments. A craftsman's ability to do their job is dependent on having the right tools. So where does an innovator, someone who takes an idea and makes it real, find the right tools to do their job? Outfit your innovator's garage by visiting innovation.tools. Innovation.tools is an online store created by innovators for innovators. It's where you will find tested and proven tools to help you create that next great product or service. These tools include books, audio training, video training, brainstorming how-tos, and much, much more. And for a limited time, listeners of Killer Innovations will get 25% off on your first order by using the discount code RADIO at checkout. And 100% of our profits from your purchases will be donated to charity. So go to innovation.tools and create that next great innovation.
Autism. One out of every 68 children in America are impacted across every race, ethnicity, and socioeconomic group. If you aren't directly affected, someone you know is. Today's world doesn't support those on the autism spectrum. It needs hacking for us to truly welcome those who think and create differently than ourselves. We're Hacking Autism, a nonprofit charity with a mission to hack therapy, technologies, and career opportunities that improve the personal and professional lives of people on the autism spectrum. We believe that everyone can play a role in supporting those on the autism spectrum so that they can show their unique talents and abilities in this fast-paced world. You aren't powerless in this fight. Use your gifts and talents to make a positive impact. Join us in making a difference. Go to hackingautism.org to learn more.
Greece is cheap.
But the airfare costs a fortune.
Paris?
Not much closer, and again, airfare...
What about Puerto Vallarta?
Let's face it, flying anywhere is just too expensive.
Wait, what's this? Low-cost airlines.
With one call to low-cost airlines, you'll drastically slash your travel costs. We're talking insanely low airline prices to any of your favorite destinations. Where would you like to go? London, Rome, Costa Rica, Australia?
Wow, that's cheap.
So why wait? Call now to learn how crazy cheap it is to fly anywhere in the U.S. or international. Our prices are so low, we can't publish them. The only way to get them is to call to instantly hear the most amazing best deals on airline travel. It's that easy. So call now and start packing.
800-217-5107. 800-217-5107. 800-217-5107. That's 800-217-5107.
Do you need a car? Been shopping only to be turned down because of bad credit, low credit, no credit, bankruptcy, or divorce? Guess what? Today's your lucky day, because now you can buy a car, truck, or SUV, just about any vehicle. It's true. Bad credit? Doesn't matter. No credit? Doesn't matter. Bankruptcy or divorce? It just doesn't matter. As a matter of fact, your job is your ticket to your new vehicle. We're Auto Credit Express, and we've helped thousands of people just like you. Antonio H. told us, great company, got me connected, and the day I went in, I drove off in the car I wanted. 100% worth your time. Need a car? Get started now and drive off as early as today. Just go to 11ignoremyscore.com right now. That's www.11ignoremyscore.com. Auto financing the easy way. 11ignoremyscore.com. Get started today. Auto financing the easy way.
If you're suffering from hearing loss, stay tuned for a special offer from the makers of Listen Clear, a revolutionary hearing aid breakthrough designed by top audio engineers to fit your ear almost invisibly. Right now, you can try Listen Clear hearing aids absolutely free for 45 days. You can also qualify for free shipping and free batteries for life. Listen Clear hearing aids are so lightweight and comfortable, you can wear them all day long. They're practically invisible too, so others won't even notice you're wearing them. And the best part is, you'll be able to hear almost everything, everywhere. So do something about your hearing loss. Call Listen Clear now to get started with your 45-day risk-free hearing aid trial. This special offer won't be available for long, so call Listen Clear now.
800-716-4650. 800-716-4650. 800-716-4650. We're here 24 hours a day to help. That's 800-716-4650.
Biz Talk Radio.
This is Killer Innovations, a show about ideas, creativity, and how you can innovate. Welcome to the Innovator's Garage, where you learn to create your next game-changing killer innovation.
Welcome back. We're going to hop right back in with Sharon. Hey, Sharon, at the end of the last segment, I asked you to think about what would be that advice from your research looking at DARPA that the listener could apply to their own thinking around innovation. So I'm going to hand it over to you.
Sure. I do have three. I think they're interrelated a bit. First is that the price of success is failure. And this is part of the lesson. DARPA likes to say we don't remember our failures, you know, so we try things over and over. But I would come to a more subtle lesson that, yes, the failures matter. That DARPA has had some tremendous successes like ARPANET, but its legacy in Vietnam was very disastrous. And when you think about a legacy of success, you have to think about what were the results of these failures. So that's one. The second one for DARPA is that what problem are you trying to solve? There's a tendency to think of DARPA as this innovative agency, but that would just put out lots of successful technologies. What made it successful was it was a problem-solving agency for war. You know, the scope of what you're trying to achieve, the mission matters. If you just created an agency and said, come up with good science and technology, I don't think you would get important innovations. And the third one for DARPA, which is, I think, related to that, is the function is more important than the form. There's a tendency in government these days, and maybe even in industry, you would know better, to come up with a DARPA model. We're going to, you know, arrange our chairs the way DARPA does. We're going to have short-term employees the way DARPA does. That is not what makes DARPA successful. That helps it. The lack of bureaucracy, you know, the coming in and out of employees. What makes DARPA successful is that it is trying to solve the problems of warfare, that it has this very important mission that it's focused on. And then everything else feeds into it. Everything else makes it successful. You know, the DARPA, you know, you can't just take the DARPA model and put it at Google or Facebook or at the CIA. It has to have a mission. It has to have a customer, which in this case is the Pentagon.
Well, it's interesting, particularly on this function is more important than the form, right? Yeah, there's literally 10,000 innovation consultants out there running around going, I've got this magic 10-step process, and if you follow this, magic happens, and it's bogus, right? You know, it's you have to create what works for your organization, whether it's DARPA. You know, what is your mission? What is your purpose? Why are you even doing innovation? Is it, and a lot of organizations are just doing, quote, innovation for innovation's sake.
Well, no, exactly. I mean, one of the biggest lessons I learned, one of my favorite DARPA directors from years past was this guy, Stephen Lukasik, who was the director in the 1970s. And when there was this sort of fad 10 years ago for creating DARPA replications in Homeland Security and the Department of Energy and the intelligence community. So these people started visiting him to take notes on you know, management theory and what made DARPA successful. And he said, you know, look around at my library. There's not a single management book here. There's not a management theory book. I don't think about management. I think about what problems I'm trying to solve. That is what he thought about. And that is really what drove the heart of success at DARPA.
And it's actually, you know, I sit here, you know, and I think about it, you know, if you look at, my background at HP, Dick Lampman, when Dick Lampman ran HP Labs, it wasn't around the form. It was, what's the big problems that's facing the computer industry, and how do we go attack those problems, and how do I bring Absolutely. The best and brightest?
You know, same thing at Bell Labs. Yeah. You know, Bell Labs in its heyday, the problems it was trying to solve in the big picture were the problems of the telecommunications industry. That is a big problem. There are a lot of technical challenges. So that I think that is the biggest, that's one of the biggest lessons that I drive from DARPA.
So, hey, Sharon, as we wrap up this segment of the show, what is the best way for the listeners to keep track of what you're up to and what you're working on next?
You know, usually my Twitter feed these days, I have a pretty stagnant, website. So Twitter is where I tweet out the articles I'm working on, that I'm editing, my thoughts of the day, if I have any. That's really where I kind of keep up to date on things.
And we'll put Sharon's Twitter feed up on the show notes at Kill Innovation, so therefore you can be able to follow her. Hey Sharon, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us in today's show, and loving the stories today. And I would encourage listeners, go out and check out the book. Hop on over to Amazon. We'll have a link so you can find the book easily and check it out. DARPA's got, I mean, I think about historically an organization that, you know, people know about if you're in the innovation game, but probably don't really understand what was really the magic behind it and, like, these untold stories. I mean, I've read a lot about DARPA, and I've heard stories today that I just never have heard. So, Sharon, congratulations on I know what was probably a hard slog getting through and pulling this all together. So I wish you the best of luck on your book. So as we wrap up today's show, I want to take this time to give you a quick few updates. We will be at CES this year. So if you will be there and you want to meet, or we will also be there recording the show. So if you've got, or you know of somebody that's there who you think story should be heard by the listeners here at Co-Innovations, just drop me a note, phil@killerinnovations.com. We'll get them on the schedule. Or, hey, we can just maybe just meet up and, you know, say hi while everybody's in Las Vegas in January. I also want to encourage you to hop on over and take a listen to Kim McNicholas' show, Kim on Innovation. She's been on this show many, many times. She's actually guest hosted this show. I've guest hosted her show. Kim and I actually have a new project that we'll be starting after the first of the year. I'll talk about more on that after January 1st. But if you don't know much about Kim, she's the former executive director of Sir Richard Branson's Extreme Tech Challenge and a former reporter from Forbes covering technology in Silicon Valley. Her show is on Fridays on KDOW in Silicon Valley. But her show is now up on the podcast. You can check that out over on iTunes and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Check out Kim's show. Great stuff. Great guests. With that, we're going to wrap up today's show. Appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to spend with us here. We're coming up on the next season in March. We will be announcing some stuff after the first of the year on getting ready for the new season launch and giving you a little bit of insight on what we're working on. So, but if you have ideas and suggestions or questions you just want to get answered on the show, just go ahead and again, just drop me a note. And that email address that I gave you comes directly to me. It doesn't get filtered through anybody. So as we close out, don't let the innovation antibodies get you down. Don't let somebody else dissuade you from going forward with your idea. Go out there and change the world. And we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or service. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com. Biz Talk Radio.